Okay, Ramban, Parshas Truma. So the Ramban begins Parshas Truma with explaining what the concept of the Mishkan was. And the Ramban says that the Mishkan was supposed to be a mini constant Maimon Har Sinai. So whereas at Maimon Har Sinai, that was a one-time event, and it was very public, where Hashem's voice was calling out to all of Klal Yisrael, and was speaking to Moshe, and then Moshe to the Jewish people. So this would be a mini version of it, constantly. So where Hashem spoke to Moshe, his voice spoke to Moshe, so Hashem speaks to Moshe in the Mishkan, that the Shekhinah would reside, so to speak, above the Aron, by the Kruvim, and Hashem's voice would go out through the Kruvim to Moshe, same like it was at Har Sinai. And of course, Be'ikar, just like Hashem's Shekhinah was on Har Sinai, Hashem's Shekhinah would be in the Mishkan, again, communicating with Moshe and with Klal Yisrael. But again, this was Betzina, so there was not in Har Sinai. It was a once-in-a-lifetime event with a huge noise and, you know, whatever. So here, there's no Eish, there's no mountain on fire in the Mishkan, but as he describes, the Kruvim were supposed to be gold because they were supposed to be like Eish, that the voice came out from the Kruvim. And the Pasuk says, So similarly, the voice is going to come down to the Kruvim on the earth and go out to Moshe. And again, it's like not quite fire, but the angels, the Kruvim are supposed to be a remnant to that. Anyway, it's supposed to be a reenactment of Har Sinai, which Hashem Shekhinah is constantly being with us and communicating. Okay. Now, a lot of the rest of the Rambans in the Parsha are like machloksim with Rashi about exactly what things looked like or what things were. So we'll go through them, some of the more technical, we'll just go through some basic ones. So, I don't know if this is machlokas, but this is a discussion. The Pasuk says, Besamim l'shemen ha-mishcha v'lekteres ha-samim. So what are besamim and what are samim? I think most of us just assume that those are basically kind of synonyms. But it says, Besamim l'shemen ha-mishcha v'lekteres ha-samim, which Rashi's pshat sounds like it's saying there are besamim for the shemen ha-mishcha and there are samim for the keteres, as if those are two separate things. Anyway, the Ramban suggests that besamim are edible besamim, like cloves, let's say, and samim are things that are just for smelling, you know, some things that are not edible. There may be medicines or whatever, or chemicals, but they're not edible. Besamim are edible. Now the pshat he gives are besamim are the chashiv ones. And either way, he says that bosem and besamim may both be a milim or kevis, two words put together, which are bosamim, like besamim is bosamim, and bosem is bosam. Same idea, that they have sam in it. That's, in other words, in that way, they're both basically similar or the same word. Okay. That's that. Then we have another, this is a machlokas, about what the Avni Miluim were. So the Avni Miluim were the stones on the Choshen, and then each one had the name of a Shevet on it. That's the Avni Miluim. Rashi says Miluim are, because it was the part that was attached to the ephod were these, like, gold squares that had, they were like pockets that you would put the stones in them. So golden, I don't know another word, whatever, square pockets that you would fill, that's the word miluim, you would fill with these stones. That's Rashi's pshat. The Ramban disagrees and says, no, there was no box. It was like, you know, like ladies who have diamond rings when they get engaged, like where it's like a three prong sticking out that holds the rock. That's what it was. Not a box that you stick the stone in, but rather it was held just like an engagement ring. Like there were three prongs, three forks, he calls it, whatever, three prongs sticking out that the Avnei Miluim went in. And he says this helps explains because it says that the Choshen, the chains that were coming out of the Choshen attached to the ephod, so they were on this thing. So if this thing was these squares, how would you connect to that if they're the prongs? So then you could just stick the circle from the chains onto one of the prongs so that to keep the choshen up. Okay, that's a machlokas about what it looked like. And just as far as what the word avne miluim means, Rashi said, again, it means it fills it up. The Ramban says miluim means that they're perfect, that they're not cut that way, they're naturally that way. Okay, then another important one. It's not a not machlokas, but just an important piece. It's also a muster piece about the Aron. A lot of people discuss this, that the it says, by all the kalim of the Mishkan, you singular will build it. It's talking to Moshe. Moshe representing Klal Yisrael, you will build it. By the Aron, it says, v'asu, which sounds like everybody's going to build it. So the Ramban says that's exactly right. Everybody has to build the Aron, because if you want to have a shaychus to the Torah, you have to be a part of building the Aron. And also, as he mentions, is also where the Shechina rests. But anyway, that they should all be Yisku Kula in the Torah, so they all have to participate in making the Aron. That's why it says Vasu. And how, per se, would they all be participating in the making of the Aron? So he says, either they would donate a golden kli or something, or whatever, something necessary to help build the Aron, or they would actually help Batal a little bit. You know, like you imagine, like the people who helped the sofer, right? You know, you kind of hold his hand or whatever. I don't know if it was exactly that, but whatever, they helped out with the actual building of it. Or, he says, they just want to help. You imagine the old man who can't, or whatever, who can't help building it. He says, oh, yazur lebetal al ezer ma'at, either help a little, or sheyachavnu lebedavar. You just have kavona. You want to help. You can't do anything about it. You want to help. That was enough. Which is a fascinating muster of art. Like, that means if you want to have a chelik in Torah, and for whatever reason you just can't, the fact that you wish you could, you want to, you're doing everything you can to, and you're mechavin to, so that's a schus as well. Okay, next thing is where the, in the, when carrying the Aron, again, back to Machlokas, where were the circles that you stuck the poles in that held up the Aron? So Ramban says they were at the bottom of the Aron, and Rashi seems to hold that they were towards the top. Okay, just to make you aware of Machlokas, there are. And we have the Shulchan, this part is not Machlokas, we have a Shulchan where Rashi says, that's where Osher and Gedula come from. As it says, Shulchan Malachim. So that's the Shulchan. It has the Zerza, sorry, it has the Zerza, it has a crown around it to hint to you that, it's Shulchan Malachim, that's where Osher and Gedula come from. Okay. The Ramban agrees with this. He says, this is, the way bracha comes to the world. That is, there's bread put on the Shulchan, as we know. And he says, if you want bracha to come to you, Hashem doesn't do anything anymore. Yesh me'ayin. That was before He created the world. Right now, everything works. It has to have a starting. It has to be a start with something that exists in the world. So, if you want to make to have a ribui bracha, you have to start with money. You know, there's an old expression: you need money to make money. So it's kind of like that. You need bread to make bread. That is, we have a shulchan on the table, and Hashem gives His bracha, and that helps everybody's bread in the whole Klal Yisrael. As the example is often given, He gives it that the lady that Elisha made that nace with, that she kept pouring the oil jugs, right? She had one oil jug, and He said, just get more kalim, keep on pouring, because she had a little bit of oil, and with that little bit of oil, the bracha came. Was it Elisha or Elio? I forget already. Anyway, that little bit of oil, I think it was Elisha, the little bit of oil keeps going and doesn't stop. But you have to have some, you have to start with something. And the bracha to build on that. So you had the little bit of oil. For that, it could stop, never stop pouring. They used to say about the Baba Sali, I think, that he would pour arak and it would never stop pouring. It's the same idea. Anyway, here we have that you have the lechem apanim on the shulchan, because from there parnasa and bracha came to everybody. It started with the shulchan, and from there the bracha came to everyone. Okay, now speaking about the Lechem HaPanim, now we get back to Machlokas. Rashi says the Lechem HaPanim, I think the picture we're all familiar with is probably, I think, is not necessarily the one we paskin like. Everybody's used to the picture of the Lechem HaPanim is the way Rashi describes it, which is face. Lechem HaPanim, like a face that has panim roe lakan lakan, which means it's like a square, and, or maybe like a box. There's a bottom and it comes back up again and then comes in again. Just boxy. So that's Rashi's pshat in Lechem HaPanim. That's like one pshat in the Gemara. There is another pshat, which is a teva prutza, which is instead of the picture you probably are picturing in your head, like a box, this is like a boat. Imagine the front of a boat. You know how it slides? A boat slides on both sides. It ends at a point, then goes back up, and then maybe curves over. That's what the Lechem HaPanim looked like, according to another shita, which again, more likely we paskin like the Svina Rokedis. It looks like a boat. So it's not the box, rather it's that shape of a boat where it ends, I wouldn't say it ends at a point necessarily, but it slopes down that way. Okay, anyway, if that's the case, what happened to the Lechem HaPanim? So he says, it brings the Ebenezer, it says, it's Bavur Lefanai Tamid. It means it's in front of Hashem. Panim is in Lefanai Tamid.
Okay.
Completely agav, there is a place in Karnei Sharon called the Lechem HaPanim Institute, where someone nowadays makes the Lechem HaPanim and the Shtei Lechem. If you ever want to see what it actually looks like in real life, you can go there. Okay, moving right along. The menorah. So the menorah was miksha achas. We know it was one solid piece of gold. What exactly did it look like? So the Ramban explains which parts were considered miksha that had to be part of it, which parts were not, did not have to be miksha, did not have to be part of it. So he describes, there. We know there's the melkachayim and the machtos, besides the menorah itself that you're picturing. There's this other thing called the melkachayim and the machtos. Again, we're referring to Perek Chav Hei, Pasuk Lamech Ches, says, Malkachel Machtoseh Zahav Tahor. So Rashi says it means the things, the Malkachel, the things used to clean out the Nair with. And the Machtos are these small Bazichim that you use to clean out the Efer in the Nair in the mornings. Okay, so the Ramban disagrees with this. The Ramban says, this is all part of the menorah itself. And it has to be part of the miksha. So he says that the neros were kind of like, you know, the genie lamps or that kind of look, and had a cover. Like you imagine, you know, the genie lamps, if you picture them, they had the place where you put in the oil, and then they have the little spout where the candle comes out of. And where the oil is covered with this little cover. So he says that's what the Malkachecha was. That was the cover of the oil. So you have the candle, you know, the six branches. You have a branch. On the top, you have where the oil goes in, and then the spout facing towards the middle. And then the cover of it, which is part of it, that's the Malkachayim. And the Machtos are the cups under each Nair, which catch the Nitzotzei Esh. I think, to be honest, I can't say I picture that exactly perfectly. The other thing is the cover for the oils. This Tzvasim, I'll read you his words. You can tell me his words are they are the Sapalim, that's the cup, Shetachas Kol Nair V'Nair, Lachtos Nitzotzei Esh, Sheyiplo Mimenu. Okay, honestly, I'm not sure exactly what the picture is. But the top is the top of the candle. Anyway, those all have to be a mixture. That has to be part of it. The thing on the bottom, the thing on the top, that has to be part of it. But the things that are separate that you use to clean it out, so that's obviously not part of it. That's not mixture. Furthermore, this is all based on a price, huh? The cups and the flowers, you know, the things that make it beautiful, the cups and the flowers, all that stuff, it doesn't have to be mixture, actually. Because b'di'evit, if you don't have them, it's still a kasher menorah. So therefore, anything that b'di'evit, if you don't have it, it's still a kasher menorah. It doesn't have to be miksha. Meaning, if you don't make it out of the if you make it out of some other material, the menorah, so then you don't put the gevi'im and the prachim. So anyway, therefore, all those things don't have to be miksha either. Okay, one last point is about the directions he talks about: Mizrach, Ma'ariv, Tzafon, and Darum. So, basically, there's different words for a lot of the directions. And some of them are like nicknames, and some of them are the real names. So Mizrach, say, for example, is really the east, and that's where the sun rises, Zoreach. I think that should be obvious. But it also, whenever you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're facing east, so there's Kedma, and then there's Achor, so because you're always facing east, so your cut, that's Kadam, is in front of you. Achor is in back of you, so Achor is going to be west, but that's not the real name. Ma'ariv is the real name at Erev when it goes sets in the nighttime. We also it's Achor, and it's Yama. We also say west because the Yam is in the west. Darom is the real name for the south. Which he says is really a conjugate, whatever, combined word of Dor Rum, because the sun is it dwells there high, whatever. It's also called Negev, and that's from the south is also Negev, Negba. That's also because it's dry there. Naguv is to be dried. It's dried out there because it's so hot. It's another reason for that. Tzafon is the north. That's the real name for the north. And the sun is, he says, is not less seen there, so it's hidden. So that's Tzafon. Anyway, I think those are all of them. And just one thing he says at the end about the west, you know, we don't always, if Harutz Shiach Kim Yadrim, so you turn, not that he mentions this part, just as a Hakdama, you turn to the south for Chachma, because that's where the menorah was in the south. And if you want to be rich, you turn to the north, because that's, as we said, where the Lechem Apanim was. What's in the west? So that's where the Aron was. So now he doesn't speak it out just that way, but he does say that the west is called Yam, because the Shechina is Bemayrav, and Ein Yam, and he brings the Chazal, the Medrash that says, Ein Yam El HaTorah, Shenem Arva Rechava Mine Yam, that the Sea of Torah is greater than the sea, and the Aron is in the west, and the Shechina is in the west, and that's all a hint, apparently, to Torah, which is also known as water and a sea. Okay, that's it.